It's too hot. I know. Hot. I know.
I'm going to say that every time. It's too hot. Falling back into the debt trap that, you know, you fall into in the fiat world.
As long as you have a little Bitcoin, you're better off than most people.
But I was like, yeah, you know, like I could see living in this area for like part of the year.
We're just so early.
So like everyone that's going to be at this party is going to be in the green.
It's Mandana.
And Ian.
Welcome to Flirting with Bitcoin.
Season 3.
That's right. 3 years ago, I tricked Ian into a weekly date night.
I let you trick me so I could teach you about Bitcoin.
Well, it worked. I'm very excited for the halving.
You should be. Bitcoin's about to do what Bitcoin's about to do.
Ooh, okay then. Kian, can we start the show?
Okay. Let's go.
Hey, babe.
Hey, Mandana.
So it's part 3 of our series.
It has turned into a multi-part series, yeah.
So last time we talked about your trip and how it finally felt to kind of live on the Bitcoin standard.
Yeah, we didn't actually use that exact phrase, but yes, that is what it was.
In retrospect, now we know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and today I want to get your general impressions of El Salvador, like the people. Maybe taking a step back from Bitcoin, integrating Bitcoin in the impression, but yeah, like just you went. What do you think?
Overall, yeah. I think the people of El Salvador are great. I really enjoyed myself. I did not meet a single person that I felt the need to get away from, which is usually like how I feel when I go to foreign countries. There's always somebody that I'm just like, get away from me. But the big thing I would say is that everyone is very excited. They're like, you're in my country. Let me show you.
I love that. I love hospitable cultures.
Yeah. And, you know, I think overall that's the general vibe. But I think when you mix in Bukele and Bitcoin, you get this like extra powerful version of that.
Before we get into that, let's first say hello to our listeners. Hola, Spain.
Namaskar, Nepal.
Guten Tag, Germany.
Hola, Brazil.
Sawadi, Thailand.
G'day, UK.
G'day, Canada.
Hola, Argentina.
Buongiorno, Italy.
Namaste, Bharat, aka India.
Namaste, Philippines.
Bonjour, France.
Hola, Portugal.
Hello, Indonesia.
Hello, Netherlands.
Konnichiwa, Japan.
Witam, Poland.
Zadrivet, Bulgaria.
Hola, Venezuela.
G'day, Australia.
Hola, Mexico.
What's up, Nigeria?
And howdy, howdy to Texas. What time is it, babe?
The current time is 832-194, and we are 144 blocks since our last recording, which is exactly one day. We are also 7,806 blocks away from the halving.
Yeah, so you might think, all right, so she's not going to ask the whole, if I gave you one US dollar, how many acres could I get on Sunny Bitcoin Island? Because there's no way that the Satoshi price index could have moved in a day.
But it did.
So, babe, if I gave you one US dollar, how many acres could I get on Sunny Bitcoin Island?
Today, you could get 1,832 acres, aka Satoshis, on Sunny Bitcoin Island.
And what happened to the Satoshi price index?
Since our last recording, approximately 144 blocks ago, the Satoshi price index has gone down 5%. So if you're a person living on the Bitcoin standard, things got 5% cheaper for you in one day. These are the days that Bitcoiners talk about. I woke up. I looked at my block clock that I got in El Salvador at the Bitcoin hardware store. Shout out to Ronnie. And it said 2000 and something, right? Like Satoshis to dollars, right? And the price was like $51,000 and, you know, whatever. It's been oscillating there for the past couple of days, so I didn't pay attention. And then I was on a call for work. And on the call, I look over and I saw 52 and I was like, okay. And then before the call ended, it said 53, and I was like, okay. And then by the time my day was over, it was at 54. I made more money today from Bitcoin going up than I did at work. And if you live on the Bitcoin standard, these days reinforce that idea. So for example, eggs, beef, gas, milk all went down today. So technically your groceries got 5% cheaper today. Obviously the prices that, not obviously, but the prices that we quote are commodity prices, based on the website that we're using to get this data, but the idea is still the same. Like, things got cheaper for you today. 5% cheaper overall. I'll call out the numbers: 5,800 for eggs, 6,200 satoshis for beef, 4,300 satoshis for gas, and 27,000 satoshis for 100 pounds of milk.
You should find something else, because I feel like it's a hard comparison for people to make.
I mean, yeah, I'll be...
A dozen eggs I buy often, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's a commodity price, yeah, so it is what it is.
Find something else.
But the general idea there is that milk got cheaper also, mm-hmm. right? Which doesn't just mean gallons of milk. It means products that are derived from milk got cheaper.
Ooh.
Right? So... That's the thing about commodities that we don't really talk about, because that would be like the really esoteric version of what's going on. But it's not just that the price of milk got cheaper for Bitcoiners. It means that the price of things that are made from milk should also be getting cheaper for you. So yogurt should be getting cheaper. Mm. Cheese should be getting cheaper, right? Like, the things that are derived from that commodity are all going to come down at some point. First, the commodity price comes down. Then the consumer price comes down. So today was a really good day. 5% gain on the price of Bitcoin.
Day's not over, baby.
I mean,
I can't promise Bitcoin's going to go up, but your night could get better.
Okay. Yeah.
Any housekeeping, babe?
Yeah. You know, standard housekeeping. Start of season 3. We have a merch store now. So check out store.flirtingwithbitcoin.com. Also for season 3, we have a Telegram group. So it's t.me/flirtingwithbitcoin. On Twitter, you can find us at FlirtingWithBTC. On Instagram, you can find us at FlirtingWithBitcoin. On Nostr, there'll be a link in the description, because we're not reading off NPubs. And as always, you can go to www.flirtingwithbitcoin.com to subscribe to our newsletter.
So when we talked about the price earlier today, I looked at you and I said, are you doing the math and thinking you can quit? And you were like, I made more today than I do.
Yeah, I definitely made more today from Bitcoin appreciating than I did at my job. If we have a series of 5% days in a row, which I think is going to happen, it gets more and more real that mm-hmm. like that day might come. I don't think I'm there yet per se from just purely Bitcoin appreciating, but it becomes more real. It's coming. I don't know when, but it's coming.
So babe, let's talk about San Salvador. What did you do? Who did you see? Interesting conversations.
Yeah. So San Salvador is interesting. So just a little context and a little backstory. There's, and I think we talked about him last episode, but there's a guy who started a company in El Salvador who's a taxi driver. So basically the story is this guy used to be an Uber driver. And one day he picked up some Bitcoiners at the airport and they taught him about Bitcoin. That's like the short version of the story. But the rest is history. He basically started his own taxi company. He has like 21 drivers. Shout out to Bitcoin. And they basically are, if you're like into Bitcoin and into El Salvador, like this is the guy you call when you go to El Salvador. When you make your quote unquote pilgrimage, you should hit up Napoleon at bitdriver.com.
Yeah. One part of the story that I really liked that you told me was that he was charging, you know, half as much as Uber was.
Yes.
And what did you tell him?
I didn't tell him per se anything, but like I saw the price of an Uber to the airport and he was going to charge me like half. And so when he was typing in on his phone, like to produce the invoice so I could pay him in Bitcoin, he like showed it to me. And then I just hit delete, 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 delete. And I typed in the Uber price. Mm. And he was like, oh, wow. And I was like, that's what you're worth.
Yeah. Uber's done the math for you.
Yeah. So like charge,
people will pay it.
Charge, you know, charging a competitive price, but like Uber is extracting a lot of value from Uber drivers. And because of Bitcoin, this guy technically has a company that's competing with Uber in El Salvador. And I'm just going to be a person that's very vocal and say, if you're going to El Salvador, especially if you're going to the halving party, contact Napoleon. Set up your transportation from the airport with him. He's not just him. Like he has other people that'll drive. So like work with him, help him build up his business because he's a Bitcoiner in El Salvador that is doing a lot more than just the taxi driving, right? And to the point of Bitcoiners in El Salvador in general and like the education of Bitcoin, catching up with the population and stuff like that, I think school and like just educating people is great. But the best way to educate people is to show someone doing really well because of Bitcoin. Like there's, you could teach someone all about the protocol. That won't matter. If they see someone becoming well off,
yeah,
because
stable, all that good stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And not falling back into the debt trap that, you know, you fall into in the fiat world. That'll be enough to pique people's interest and be like, hey, what's going on? How did that work? Right. So Napoleon, really great guy. We had a language barrier. You know, he's working on his English. I'm working on my Spanish. And we were like driving in the car with like Google Translate, just like sitting there. And so he would try to say some stuff in English and then I wouldn't understand. He'd say it in Spanish and then the phone would translate for us. It's like an hour from El Zante to San Salvador. So that was like our drive. But when we got to San Salvador, we started talking about, I started asking questions about like buying property, you know, and I was asking about like taxes and he was just like, what? And I was like, yeah, you know, like property taxes. What are the property taxes? And he was like, I don't know. And I was like, I mean, come on, like, you know, like you buy a house and then I was explaining to him American real estate property taxes and his mind was blown. He was like, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
He's like, what do you mean you pay for it every year? It's your house. You bought it. And I'm like, yeah, you would think.
Mm-hmm.
And so like just his reactions were just so funny to me because I was like, that's the natural reaction you should have.
I love that you guys connected like that, even though there was a language barrier.
I mean, we connected on a lot of stuff, but that was like the first moment where we just kind of both were just laughing hysterically because it was like, yes, this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got some more information. There are property taxes in El Salvador, but they're like comically small.
It's not something that you have to factor into your lifestyle.
You know, in America, for example, not only do you pay property taxes on your house, but every year or two, they are readjusted. So if you live in a neighborhood that becomes more desirable, they just revalue your house and now you have to pay more in taxes. So you might have bought a house 10 years ago, like our neighborhood, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Someone could have bought a house in our neighborhood 20 years ago for like $100,000 and now that house goes for $1 million. Mm-hmm. They have to pay taxes on $1 million.
Yeah, it eventually prices them
out. It eventually prices you out. And so I was trying to explain this to him and he just didn't understand. So the example that I gave to him was like, okay, imagine there's 10 houses on a street and you buy the first house for $100,000 and you got to pay 5% every year. And you're like, okay, I can handle that. And I was like, but by the time the person buys the 10th house on the street, they'd pay $200,000. They come back and say, your house is worth $200,000. And now you got to pay twice as much in property tax. And his reaction was just like, that's robbery.
Yep.
And I was like, yes. And that's America. Like, and so that was like, you know, I would say like that's when we really like clicked and we were just like laughing hysterically in the car. When we got to San Salvador, he took me to the plaza where Bukele had made his speech after he just got reelected. And there was like some 10K race that was going on. And that was like the finish line. They had like a dance floor with like people partying and there was all kinds of stuff going on. And like he was just really excited. And I was like, I'm not really here to see this. Like, I just want to see the city. I don't need to see like a party.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, no, like you wouldn't have done this 3 years ago. And he was like, yeah, like the day of the speech, everyone will come here, you know, when a president gets elected. But then after that, it's like, you wouldn't have hung out here. And now this. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's crazy. That's like us saying like, oh, you wouldn't hang out on the National Mall unless the president was getting elected. Meanwhile, our National Mall, people play softball down there.
Mm-hmm.
Adult recess, basically.
Yeah, it's considered very safe. That's so sweet. I love that he wanted you to get it.
I got it, but then also being in it, it's more like, wow, like this is public space that's like available again.
Mm.
One of the neighborhoods that he drove me through, oh, I forgot the name, but it was Bonita. Anyway, it's the neighborhood or roughly the area where like Max and Stacy live because they've moved there and it's very nice. You know, like comparatively to other things that I saw there. And one of the things that I've learned in my travels is the parts of town with like big trees, those are the nice parts, right? So that part of town has like, you know, very like European trees lining the road or whatever. And there's a lot of high rises there. We don't have high rises in DC. But I was like, yeah, you know, like I could see living in this area for like part of the year and then driving down the mountain to El Zante because not going to stay in El Zante.
It's too hot. I know.
Hot.
I know.
I'm going to say that every time. It's too hot.
El Zante scared Ian.
No, it didn't scare me. It's just hot. Like
you sound traumatized.
Look.
Not to laugh at your trauma, I apologize.
It's not traumatic. It's just I really feel like I can handle the heat pretty well, and it hit me. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I'm like, this is something different. But anyway, we're walking around San Salvador before we went to this meetup for Cubo Plus. And he was just like pointing stuff out, and he was like, oh, you want to go in there? Do you want to go in there? And I was like, no, I'm good. I just wanted to like see like the people, you know? I wanted to just walk in and amongst the people. And the funny part is, like, for the most part, I didn't, you know, I don't even think I had anything like Bitcoin related on me. I think I, as always, whenever I go somewhere, I tend to blend in unless I talk. And so like me and him were like speaking English. And anytime someone would like walk past us, we were speaking English, then they would like turn and look at me like, you know, who's the gringo? Mm-hmm. But like, if I was just walking,
gringo,
if I was just walking, like, no, I was taller than most people, but I didn't feel like out of place. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like have my head on a swivel. I didn't feel unsafe because mm-hmm. everyone's just going about their day. Like overall, San Salvador was nice. It seemed like it's very car dependent. It seemed like there wasn't a lot of people walking around on the streets, but it was like late and Saturday, so people were probably already where they wanted to be. But the one thing I will say that I noticed, especially when we were leaving that evening, was that there's just like a lot of there's just a lot of buildings that are obviously not. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me a lot of like any city who claims to have like the warehouse district before it became the warehouse district. Mm-hmm. It's just a fancy name for like, these were buildings that nobody was using. Yeah. And now they put lofts in there. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking, when I was driving around, every time we'd go through like a part when he would like, cause we were like trying to get out of San Salvador back to the highway to go back down the mountain. And we went through like two or three areas and I was like, where are we? And then he'd say where we are. And I'm like looking around, like there's no lights on. Like there's no people in like this part of town. And as a person that's like considering going to El Salvador or spending more time in El Salvador or putting, you know, capital or whatever into El Salvador, it was very surprising to see like the capital having just multiple blocks of just empty vacant buildings. That's not unheard of because you think like, okay, I'm in the capital of a country. Where are all the people? It's like, no, there's not. There's parts where there's just no people. So that like that drive in San Salvador, just it was quick, but I got a lot just from the vibes. And Napoleon was very helpful. Like he was pointing stuff out and like really just explaining to me like, you know, over there is, you know, this. I'm just giving an example. Like over there is the historic district. And then he was like pointing. He's like, if you go all the way up this road, it basically goes up to the volcano.
And you said they're building an airport over there.
They're not building an airport there. Oh. They're building an airport in the city town called La Union, mm-hmm. Which is far away from the capital comparatively. The airport currently is probably like 30 minutes from the capital, maybe 45 to an hour in traffic. But La Union is maybe an hour to the east. So you're going away from the capital. In theory, it'll probably be a nicer airport and people will probably fly into it, right? But La Union is where they're building. A couple years ago, Bukele made the announcement they were going to build Bitcoin City. And it was going to be a city built into this volcano or at the foot of a volcano. And like it's like on this bay. So that's where they're building the airport. They're definitely planning on building Bitcoin City. It's going to take time.
Yeah, and you're saying like that's why you can see El Salvador being the Western Hemisphere's Singapore.
Yeah, it's not going to happen like in El Zante, and it's not going to happen in the capital.
Definitely not El Zante. It's too hot.
It's too hot. I mean, but what Napoleon was telling me is that La Union is hotter than El Zante.
Ooh.
So I was like, oh yeah, it's going to be Dubai.
Yeah,
right. It's going to be Dubai in the jungle versus Dubai in the desert.
Yeah.
But the thing, we didn't obviously go to La Union. I just looked at it on Google Maps. The thing that I thought was very interesting about where La Union is it's like on a bay, right? So El Salvador has a lot of, where El Zante is, it's basically like almost like California, like the ocean and the mountains just kind of like meet. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of like beach, right? It's not flat. It's very like vertical. Where La Union is, it's like on this bay, kind of like a floodplain. It looks very flat, right? So it's going to be easier to build there, number one. But number two that I thought was very fascinating is that bay actually has three countries that like touch that body of water.
There we go.
So it's El Salvador, it's Honduras, and then it's Nicaragua. And they all are like on that bay. And all I could think of when I saw that and like listening to him explain to me like where it is and, you know, how far away from the capital it is or everything like that, it sounds very similar to Hong Kong, Macau, Shenzhen, that bay where basically all electronics come from in the world. It looks very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you go look at pictures of that place like 30, 40 years ago, it was nothing.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at it going like my idea of Central America and these Central American countries kind of forming a monetary union via Bitcoin. It's completely optional. There's no like, they don't have to sign paperwork. You just join the Bitcoin network and you've joined a monetary union. It's free for everyone. But that body of water can be a massive port for goods and services coming into Central America that doesn't require going through the Panama Canal, because most things are coming from China these days. So it's right there on the Pacific side. But number two is, if that's where the things are going to be coming into this, we'll just call it like the Central American Union, right? Mm-hmm. Like the European Union, whoever gets their city or their port or their like whatever entry point built first, it's over.
Yeah.
It's like you'll have such a massive head start. And I don't hear anything coming out of Honduras or Nicaragua.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't been looking.
So, well, there's nothing, right? Like Honduras, maybe. Nicaragua is not even on the landscape for like Bitcoin or whatever. But on the other side of Nicaragua is Costa Rica. So I looked it up. It's only like 10 hours from San Salvador to Tamarindo driving.
Wow.
It's not far.
So interesting.
It seems far, but it's not far. And that's like on really slow roads. Like if you were to build an actual like highway, it's probably like an 8-hour drive.
Wow.
Like these are really close countries that are just separated by like nonsense, really. You know, like, I mean, one of the guys in El Salvador was like, yeah, this is like, I forget how he said it, but he was like, this is like premium grade A beef. And then he said from Nicaragua. And I was like, I never equated those two things, but I guess that's where they got good beef.
I believe it.
I didn't know. So like, I just see like something's happening there. And I don't know if it's planned, you know, like the Illuminati plan, or if it's just like a natural things that just make sense happen.
What's your preference?
I prefer it to just be people making rational decisions that are in their benefit that don't harm their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And if everyone made decisions in that fashion, we could probably have a more like stable society.
Harmonious
society and economy. But I do think that the location of La Union is very strategic. Like it's very strategic that that's where it is.
I mean, I would hope it was strategic.
Well, sure.
You said it's hotter than El Zante. It's got to be a reason.
But I think it's more strategic because of when I looked at it on a map, I was like, oh, wow, this is like a really good spot.
And probably a place that having an airport is just going to change everything.
Very similar. I imagine 100%, just like Costa Rica building LIR, mm-hmm. where they did, it opened up the other half of the country.
Yeah.
This is going to make that part of El Salvador open for investment, right? Like,
I can't wait till our trip, babe.
Yeah, I mean, where we're going is the complete opposite direction, but no, El Salvador, I think they're going to do that city one way or another, but it's going to be part of the becoming Singapore of the Western Hemisphere, for sure.
I'm just a big fan of Central America, so, you know, I love it. I love it. I wish them all the success.
Me too, man. I like to be on the winning team, but I also like to be able to point to the other team to be like, they're winning.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing that we're not? Yeah. Without that example, then you just kind of go, you know, well, we've always won doing it this way. Like, yeah, you know, but
I don't feel like it's a them versus us, because two of my closest friends are El Salvadorian. So in my mind, I'm like, that's my family.
Yeah. I just mean more like, you know, from the, if you were to just go out on the street and just talk to people about Central America and say, excluding Mexico, what do you think about and name all the countries? They might have been to Costa Rica, but after that, that's
true. Yeah, if they're not.
They know about Costa Rica and they know about Panama because of the canal. That's
in
pretty
our
much
area,
it.
So many people are from Central America, though.
Yes,
the odds are
a
little higher that they would have like a very informed opinion.
Sure. If you don't talk to someone from Central America, then there's already a pretty big stigma on that part of the world.
Yeah.
And I just think that my trip there, and you know, when we go in April, you'll see as well. But like, it's a place that is on the up and you can feel it. And I just personally don't feel like I live in a place that's on the up. Mm. You know, if you were to ask someone about DC, like, what do you think DC is going to be like in the next 10 years? I doubt they're going to say better than now.
Really? I still have hope.
Yeah. Or any like major city in America. Mm. Like, it's just a general vibe that at the moment.
We're all struggling.
Yeah. There's a lot of opportunity there.
Hey, it's Mandana. We're in season 3, The Having, and I'm making sure we drop a new episode every week. We are dreaming big for flirting with Bitcoin, and the only thing standing in our way is time and money. Let me be transparent and talk real numbers. Through Value for Value, our listeners directly paid us 100,000 sats in season 1. Season 2, we made 1 million sats. Of course, now we gotta see if we can 10x again and reach 10 million sats this season. Hashtag relationship goals. If we earn 10 million sats from the work we put into this podcast, it'll be the sign that one of us can do this part-time, maybe even full-time. Send us Bitcoin or shop our merch store. It all helps with the goal. You can also give us an old school shout out on social, listen to us on your favorite podcasting 2.0 app, or make and share clips of the show. Your support in any form is value we appreciate. Go to flirtingwithbitcoin.com/support and let's experience value for value together. So before we wrap this up, babe, anyone else you want to give a shout out to that you met on your trip?
Yeah. So the other person that I met when I was in San Salvador was this guy, Pupusa G. He won't tell me his real name. So that's what his name is going to be until I, you know, coax it out of him. But
it's his Twitter handle too, right?
It's his Twitter handle. But, you know, unless it's on his birth certificate or whatever they call their documentation in El Salvador. Like, it's like, come on, man.
Tell me your real name.
But, you know, whatever. It is what it
is. You got to respect a brand.
It definitely is his brand. And his brand is also like software developer, Bitcoiner in El Salvador, teaching kids, right? Like, and so we started talking about that because it was a Kubo Plus meetup. And so he's involved in that program. But he also just like goes to schools and teaches kids stuff. And he was showing me videos of these kids that were like, it was like a hackathon. And he was showing this one kid, like showing off his demo, and it worked. And you've never been to a hackathon, but like when your demo works at a hackathon, normally people are just like, oh, that's cool. You know, like my thing is better, right? Because you're just waiting your turn. It's very much like stand-up comedy. But like this guy's thing worked, and all the kids in the class like basically gave him a standing ovation.
Oh my God, sweeties.
And like they're kids. I don't know their exact age, but they're definitely like,
I love sweet kids.
Of teenage age or younger. And again, like they're in a classroom. They're wearing uniforms. They're obviously in school of some sort, and they're like cheering in school. And I personally never experienced that in school, right? Granted, different times and, you know, different strokes for different folks, but like,
I was cheering in my schooling.
I don't remember it at all. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a sport. I don't remember anyone cheering for someone being intelligent.
Then you weren't the nerd I thought you were.
I mean, I was the nerd.
You just didn't know any other nerds.
No, it's just a general vibe. And it's hard to explain.
Like an excitement for education.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yes. I hear you. Yeah.
Like so he showed me that video and then we just started talking about like school. And, you know, he has a kid who's he's older. But I was just saying, you know, I have an 11-month-old. And so we just started talking about like raising kids and stuff like that. And, I forget like what he said or whatever, but I was like, yeah, you know, like, I don't know if I'm going to send Keon to public schools. And he was like, why? And I just was like, I mean, this is a Bitcoin meetup. And, you know, I don't know, like you want to have like a conversation, or are we just talking Bitcoin? He was like, no, like, let's talk, you know? And I was like, okay. And so I told him what I've been learning about my Native American stuff. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of like sat there and listened, you know? And I was like, yeah, you know, so it's been really like messing with me that, and I explained to him my like thought process. You know, I was like, basically we went to school. We all went to school. We were all taught this lie. And the people who could repeat the lie the best are the ones that we like promoted up into society. You get good grades, you go on to bigger things. And as long as you keep repeating the lie, you'll just keep moving on. And if you don't repeat the lie, or you don't learn the lie, then you're deemed dumb. And when I was done, you know, I said to him, I was like, yeah, so like, I don't think a lot of Black people in America realize this. I think people are just learning it like I am. Like, I'm 41 and just learning this, so I don't blame anyone. But he just sat there with a straight face. And then when I was done, he was like, yeah, I knew that. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, like, duh. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it's like, we've had this problem here. And so we are very clear that like there's the Europeans and the natives. And I thought all, he literally was like, I thought all Black people knew this. And it was like, I was like, no, no. He was, his mind was blown. Very similar to Napoleon and the property taxes, right? And so like when we had that conversation.
This is why traveling is so important.
Yeah. And when we had that conversation, that's when I was like, okay, like now we're just, and I said to him, I was like, this is why I had to come here. It's not even about the Bitcoin. It's just you meet people, you exchange ideas, you exchange what you're learning. Like Bitcoin, I learned this because of Bitcoin in a roundabout way. You just share all your knowledge. You don't just share the Bitcoin knowledge. That's also there, right? But like, we're all consuming that. Bitcoin is just our like union. It's our social contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I was telling him about our secret app that I'm working on. And I was like, you're the first like Bitcoiner that I've told this to. So I was like, you know, don't tell anybody, but like, just, you know, hypothetically. And he started poking holes in it. I'm not going to say what it is yet. We'll talk about that in a later episode. But he started poking holes in it. But then like, I forget what I said, but I basically was like, no, like you don't get it. You can opt in and opt out whenever you want to. And then he was like, oh yeah, that's great. That's a great idea. And I was like, okay. Like, please, new friend, don't like hate this idea.
I know. It's like, you're the only one we've told.
But like, no. So like, we had like a really good conversation. And so he was telling me about his son, and his son is like, he's teaching his son about Bitcoin. And so his, and proof of work and all these things. And so he was like, yeah, you know, my son, he's like got this journal now that he's doing on Stacker News. And so his son is like documenting his like journey in Bitcoin on Stacker News. He was like, yeah. And actually like, you know, he pulled out this bracelet. He was like, he made this. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And he was like, so yeah, you know, you can buy it or whatever, you know, for your wife. And I was like, yeah, like, of course I want to buy that, you know? And he was like, all right. And so in my mind, I'm like, you know, I'll pay you. You give me the bracelet or whatever. And he like, no, he's like, no. And he pulls up his son's Stacker News profile that has a Lightning address on it. And he was like, pay him. And I was like, man, you really just, you got me with this one. Like, this moment is awesome. Like, your son made the thing. You're selling it to me, but he's going to actually get the money. It's not like I'm giving it to you and I hope that you give it to your son, mm-hmm. right? It's like, I know he's going to get it. That like whole interaction was just like, to me, that was like one of the more special moments of the trip.
It got you thinking about Keon.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about Keon and thinking about like, how do I want to teach Keon about Bitcoin? I think when Keon gets his son's age, it'll be more obvious. So like, probably he'll have some more peers around him that are probably talking about it. But if Keon were like 11 today or 12 or, you know, a teenager, and I had to be like, look, you're going to see a lot of stuff out in the world. It's all fake.
Yeah, we're going to have that conversation with him before that.
Sure. But like, if it was just with Bitcoin today, if I had to start from today and explain Bitcoin to a teenager today, I think proof of work is the best place to start. Because if you can put work ethic into a person, that's one thing. But what will keep them going is to actually see the rewards from that work. And that was something that I always struggled with in school when everyone's like, oh, school is your job. I was like, a job pays you. Like, get out of here with this school is your job thing. Like, that's this, in my opinion, that's the stupidest thing parents can say to children. And I've already stated my opinion on school. It's just jail for kids. But this is like, okay, you made a thing with your own work, right? Someone said, yes, that is worth some money. And then they give you some money. You can either just pocket that and be like, all right, I'm done. Or you can reinvest that into like making another thing and right. Like working on a skill. Like maybe he wants to be a Bitcoin bracelet. Like maybe he wants to be the guy that like makes the best Bitcoin bracelets in the world. Maybe, I don't know. But I do think that like getting paid for your labor in real time roughly is just a very powerful reinforcer. And we tend to not pay kids. We tell them to work hard and we don't truly reward them. And that, I think, I was able to pay a kid that I don't know, but I know that he got the money.
Well, lucky for you, babe, you can practice on a couple of other kids before it's time to explain the stuff to Keon, because there is a 14-year-old who I gave the Bitcoin standard to yesterday. I haven't read it yet, but my cousin's son turned 14. Him and Keon actually share a birthday, and we've been giving them Bitcoin, the kids in our family, Bitcoin as gifts. And I handed him the book, and I said, it's time that you read this book, and then you can talk to Ian about it. And he very eagerly said, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what his dad thinks about that.
I know. Well, the conversations are going to happen.
We did. We gave him a Sats card last year.
Mm-hmm.
For Noruz, mm-hmm. and maybe for his birthday also,
yeah,
because his birthday was around now, mm-hmm. and Noruz and his birthday, and
yeah, and I said yes. Now that we've given you Bitcoin twice, and he said three times, and I said, oh yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So he, I mean, I don't know. We haven't talked to him about it, but maybe he's been thinking about it.
Well, all I will say is that whatever number it was at when I gave it to him, it's doubled.
I know. And I told him and his sister.
Yeah.
Because they're the oldest, you know, of the kids that we've given Bitcoin to. So
yeah, unfortunately, like, because they're the oldest, they're going to get fewer overall. They're going to get fewer birthday presents in Bitcoin form, right?
Yeah.
Like the babies that are born today, they're going to get 18 years of Bitcoin presents versus them. They're going to get like 5 or 6 or, you know, whatever, as long as it. You know.
Hey, as long as you have a little Bitcoin, you're better off than most people, right?
You're good. And for this one particular young man, he has his share of Bitcoin, you know, per person. It's like, 250-ish thousand Satoshis. Mm-hmm. So he's got his share. He's good.
I love that. I love that we've taken care of him.
Don't know how long it's going to take for that to be like a lot, but
he's got time. So thank you, babe, for breaking down your trip to El Salvador for me. I've had so many questions.
There's more. I just like been stealing some moments and thinking about it more. Mm-hmm. Obviously, being back and having to go to work and deal with all that doesn't give you the time to like truly think. But for people to have the comment that this thing will never work, they are so wrong.
So wrong.
So wrong.
I agree with that. I don't think I needed you to go to El Salvador. I need to go to El Salvador to see what's happening. But of course, I have a very like biased viewpoint because you're just giving me positive information. I'm not really absorbing negative information. But yeah, I'm surprised by some of the things that you shared with me. But I think the perspective that you provided really helps show how far they've come. And I know we talked about that a little bit more last episode. But yeah, I mean, I'm 100% rooting for them. I'm rooting for Bitcoin. I think that there's probably so many other things happening there. Like you said, in who knows, in 10, 20, 30, 40 years, the decisions that people are making today are really going to launch that place. So, I mean, I think it's great. It's a little disappointing that there isn't like this really sleek, high tech, well established place that you can go as a Bitcoiner and just like Bitcoin it up. It's like so interesting to me that that's not what it is yet. Obviously, the halving party is going to be that, but you know, that's not like we're just so early.
We're very early because El Salvador is one of the few, I mean, really technically the only country where it's 100% legal tender. But because of that, it's kind of like an all money in, no money out. Like when you go to El Zante and you buy a bottle of water with Bitcoin at the local convenience store, if that person truly understands what Bitcoin is, that money is never leaving that country.
Ah.
They might spend it in the country, but that money's not coming back out anytime soon. And yeah, maybe most people in El Salvador don't have a lot of Bitcoin, but the people who are getting it, like Napoleon or whatever, I'm sure he's saving in Bitcoin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're actually truly saving in Bitcoin, you're not going to like, I mean, obviously we are traveling to El Salvador to spend Bitcoin. He's not getting on a plane and coming to DC to spend it back.
Right.
So like they have such a head start that to your point, like even that decision of the people who get it saving in their country, you might end up with a bunch of Bitcoin millionaires just sitting in El Salvador, you know, like Napoleon, for example.
Minding their business.
Minding their business, yeah. Just living their lives. Everyone else can, you know, the fiat world can just kind of crash and burn or have some hemorrhage or whatever when we froze Russia's banks or whatever. Well, if you were a Bitcoiner in Russia, you got real rich real fast.
You got real quiet.
You got real quiet, right? Yeah. That's the thing that I think is most important is they have such a head start. They have this first mover advantage. And so anybody who wants to catch up has to do whatever El Salvador has done plus some.
I also think what you've talked about the past few episodes and what you're just saying, we should all remember that. Like, I should remember that when I'm interacting with other people about Bitcoin and to not feel like defeated when someone's like, you know, because sometimes I think like, wow, how have people not seen it yet? We've been talking about this for a while. Like, aren't they seeing in the news the end of FUD? Ian claims it's the end of FUD. Yeah, I think it's for all of us, all of our listeners, like if you're talking to someone, even your spouse or partner, parents, siblings, besties who like just aren't listening, it's because you're getting something that most people, it's going to take them decades. It's already been one decade.
A decade and a half.
There you go.
And I'm technically missed the first decade. Mm-hmm. I'm only like 6 years in.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'll own that.
Yeah.
You know, I was exposed to it and my first reaction was that's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand the problem that it's trying to solve. And so I think get rich quick is not the best way to describe it, but let's just call it that. Right. I was looking for the most rational get rich quick scheme. And I honestly thought that was I'll just trade Tesla. It's an up and coming company. It's solving a problem that I believe exists. I don't think they've totally solve the problem, but it's like, okay, it's going to take a while to build an electric car that's affordable and all this fun. And so I put a lot of time and effort into that. And in hindsight, I should have just been learning about Bitcoin, but I did it.
I think you've more than made up for it, babe.
But like I didn't, but I own it. That's the thing.
Not in terms of like buying Bitcoin low, but in terms of learning about Bitcoin, you've definitely caught up.
I mean, I definitely caught up. You know, at work, they always do like these icebreak for like new hires. And I've always said that, like, they'll be like, oh, what's your superpower? And I'm like, I don't want to say researching because I got to be interested in it. I can do intense research when I'm actually interested in the subject. I caught up on Bitcoin.
You never say that. I mean, I feel like that's the first time I've heard you say that.
But like, I caught up on Bitcoin. Like, there are people that have been in it longer than me. And I would argue that I know as much as them.
I agree. And I'm really glad you had that realization because I do think sometimes you question the value add of yourself in this space?
Well, I think like for me personally, my claim to fame has always been
your wife. I couldn't resist, babe.
Yeah. In addition to my wife, my claim to fame has always been Ian's like the computer guy, right?
Yeah, tech support.
Tech support for
my roommate and I used to call Ian tech support when we started dating.
Still do.
Yeah.
That's always been my claim to fame. And so technically, the fact that I couldn't do tech support for Bitcoin, right? I had a friend reach out to me and ask for help. He was like, hey, what do you know about Bitcoin mining? I'm thinking about getting into it. And I didn't know anything. And that literally is what like got me into it.
It rubbed you the wrong way.
Bothered me. Mm. It bothered me. But it
learning another button to press.
That's, I mean, like, you know, if...
Ian, what do you know about doing nails? Nothing.
That's not tech support.
Nail technology.
It's not technology. It's just varying degrees of drills.
I'll think of something.
Sure. But the point that I'm getting at is like my lack of ability to do tech support for this thing is what pulled me in.
What's pulling in other people? Just making more money.
Well, maybe, but like...
Or maybe the freedom aspect.
There's a lot of different things that pull people into Bitcoin. And it's not just the technology. It's not just making the money. It's not just the freedom. But whatever brings you in, the other people that are there will kind of inform you as like, hey, the freedom thing actually matters too. You know, like, let me explain to you how you're not free. Mm-hmm. And if you care about that, like, that's another reason to stay.
You know, I am thinking... We've given all these kids SATS cards and we haven't really checked in to see if they understand it at all or what they know about money. Like, what if we put on something for the kids to teach them about money and then explain to them what Bitcoin is?
Set it up. Yeah. I will do that.
You're ready to do it? You don't need to like outline it?
I don't need to prep.
Really?
Don't need to prep.
Okay, yeah. Okay, well, we'll
I might need some slides, but like.
You know I make a good slide deck, babe.
But like I don't even need slides. I just need to go find what the community has already made.
And, oh, that's true. And explain but we it, need right? visuals.
Yeah, I mean, we need some visuals and maybe brand it ourselves. But like for the most part, I think I could teach a kid about Bitcoin way faster than an adult.
Yeah, I mean, let's do it. I'm down.
Set it up. Put all it, right. up, put well, it on the agenda.
All the parents, we're going to be with them on Saturday. So we'll ask them. Stay tuned.
Okay. It is a topic that requires a
foundational understanding of money.
Also, like, I think people do better in person, right? Because if something doesn't make sense and you go to try to ask the question of the internet, then you have to parse through all the answers versus, hey, that doesn't make sense, and you get a response immediately. That just lets people learn and get those problems out of the way faster so that they at least feel confident to go learn more on their own. Me personally, like, I had to consume a lot of content before I was like, oh, wow, like, yeah, I think this thing is real. And if this is true, which I think I would say that all the time, like, if this is true, like, oh, my God.
And now it's if Bitcoin does what Bitcoin's supposed to do.
I mean, there's a lot of things that can make Bitcoin take longer.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, it is going to do what it needs to do.
Did you come up with that saying or did you take
That's mine.
It is?
That's mine.
Oh, you're so clever.
I mean, I'm going to say I've never heard anyone say it on a podcast. So I would claim that as my own. If Bitcoin does what Bitcoin's gonna
do. It has been claimed.
Bitcoin does what Bitcoin's gonna do. Put it on a shirt. Put it on the merch. Hey gang, it's Ian. Let's chat for a second. Bitcoiner or not, I know we're all feeling anxious to save more money lately. But do you wanna know why you're feeling that way? It's because you're still thinking in fiat. Seeing the price of everything go up in your local currency, that's what's driving you crazy. That's where all this anxiety is coming from. Meanwhile, the reality is everything is actually getting cheaper on Bitcoin Island. And you might ask yourself, how do I get to Bitcoin Island? Simple. Bitcoin Island is just a state of mind, and you need to train your brain to think in Bitcoin. Your first training exercise is to set a Bitcoin goal using the Satoshi Savings Calculator made by yours truly. And your goal should be to always have more Bitcoin today than you did yesterday. It's literally that simple. This way, the amount of Bitcoin you have only goes up. And once you start to think in Bitcoin, over time, everything around you becomes cheaper. You'll be way more confident about the future. No more anxiety. Look, we don't need to overcomplicate this. You're still early, but you gotta be strategic. And you gotta unlearn everything they taught you about money. So go to flirtingwithbitcoin.com and train your brain to think in Bitcoin with the Satoshi Savings Calculator.
I am so excited for this having party.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's going to be so interesting for me to meet other Bitcoiners. And like, okay, you've already been to El Salvador once and you were like still teaching people about Bitcoin. Are you going to be teaching people Bitcoin stuff at this thing, or are you going to like take your teacher hat off and just relax?
I don't walk around with a teacher hat on. Usually what happens is that people are talking about a thing and let's say it's a group of three people and I'm the fourth person and everyone's like, oh yeah, I've been wanting to get into that, but and then I'll just be like, okay, well, let me tell you what I know. And then usually it ends up, you know, the joke is like holding court. I don't think it's going to happen with the Bitcoiners that are going to this party. I think everyone is going to be relatively knowledgeable, but it's going to be fun to like chat just in general with, you know, people who have traveled to El Salvador to celebrate a now global holiday. If you're a Bitcoiner, this is a global holiday. Granted, we're not going to be there on the day, but we will also all celebrate together on the day on Twitter, on Noster for sure. Hopefully we can put out like a special episode that day, like to actually publish it on that day. You know, it's a new community.
Yeah. Like, am I going to feel connected to this community?
I don't know.
I don't know either. We're going to see. But Ian thinks a lot of people are bringing their spouses. So spouses unite.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, I think it's a lot of men that are the Bitcoiners and the spouse is like, meh. You know, I have a coworker and he texted me tonight actually saying like, she sees it as a black, I'm paraphrasing, but she sees it as a black hole. Like money goes in and never comes out. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it seems that way if you want dollars,
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like, I was like, that's like a good way of her to telling you that I still want dollars. Mm-hmm. But
oh yeah. You used to say that to me all the time.
Yeah. It's like, if you plan on going back into dollars at some point, because you think that's where the game is still being played, then okay. But there will come a point when you're like, I wish I had bought more, which means now you don't want dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like, it's like, it takes time. It's not just convincing the other person. It's, you need to figure out how to explain it to that person. You know, obviously we've been doing this podcast and I've been explaining it to you, but before this podcast, I don't know how much you believed me, but I'm pretty certain when I was talking about it, you were still focused on the dollar aspect.
I think without this podcast, I would have gone along with it, but I would be worried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
But I ain't worried, baby. I ain't worried about a thing. In terms of Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing about the halving and the halving party and the people that are going to be there is that, as we said at the top of the show, you know, Bitcoin moved a lot today. And let's just hypothetically say that we get a move like that every other week until the halving. Not even every week, just every other week until the halving. That easily puts us over the all-time high of 69,000.
Mm-hmm.
So like, everyone that's going to be at this party is going to be in the green. Like, no one's going to be butt hurt because they're down, you know?
If you're butt hurt, don't come.
No, but you know, like you know, like people, yeah. There's a lot of people that I talk to about Bitcoin and they'll say things like, oh, I lost a bunch of money.
I'm still down.
No, they'll say I lost money. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's because you sold.
Yeah.
And then they take that as like a slight. And I'm like, no, you wanted dollars. So you sold. I was like, I don't want dollars. Like, I don't hold any dollars that I don't have to. I pay my bills and then I sweep as much of it as rational into Bitcoin and then I wait. And I seem to be doing pretty well with that strategy. I don't need to go day trade. I don't need to follow
real estate trends.
I don't got to know like the top 10 cities to buy investment property in. I don't got to follow, what was his name? Roaring Kitty. And his GameStop stuff, I don't have to do any of that. I just save money and read books about Bitcoin and or the history of the world and the history of money and the things I want to do anyway. Only difference is that hopefully Bitcoin kind of gives me back some of my time where I can actually do that and only that
and
whenever
also,
I want.
And also flirt with your wife.
And also flirt with my wife.
Priority number one.
Flirt with my wife, do this podcast with my wife, and hopefully, you know, free up both of our time to where you do the math and you say, well, you know, assuming the ETFs keep buying as much as they're going to buy for the next decade, we're probably good, unless one day they stop buying. And then, you know, we'll have to reassess. But there's that one guy, I forget his name, Tahiti something. He like sold all his family, sold all their stuff and has been like traveling the world on a Bitcoin stack for at least 5 years. Like when I got actually into Bitcoin, they had already done that. Right. So it's like,
anything is possible, babe.
It's so like, there's plenty of examples out there of this working for people. You got to go look. But if you want to be a naysayer and you want to just say like, it's not going to work and you're not going to do any work to like change that opinion, then it's not going to work for you. It's that simple.
Coming up on this season of the Flirting with Bitcoin podcast, it's season 3, the halving. So I'm finally going to switch over my retirement to Bitcoin. Keon turns 1 this year. What's it like, babe, parenting on the Bitcoin standard? Let's talk about it. And last but not least, well, not really last, but one of the other things we're going to talk about is the launch of Ian's secret project. And of course, we're always going to be keeping you up to date on the never-ending list of things that are happening in Bitcoin. Right now, it's hit the all-time high around the world in different countries. The president of Argentina has balanced their budget in how many short months?
9 weeks.
There you go. And something that I am dying to talk about is Ian's declaration that it's the end of FUD. We are not going to see any news articles that are negative to Bitcoin.
I don't know if that is true, but the main culprits of FUD are done.
They are real quiet.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you know this, but Elizabeth Warren has come around.
What?
Well, she got trolled. It appears that she came around. She did not come around. But basically, these people got her office to sign this thing saying that they were congratulating Satoshi Nakamoto for all his contributions, and they got them to fly a flag over the Capitol. So there's like, he got a flag flown and signed by Elizabeth Warren. Thank you for your contributions.
Okay, so she really didn't turn.
They didn't read it. They of just course. Signed it, but it's there. It's there. And hey, like, why are you trying to shut down something that you support?
I guess that's the energy Bitcoiners are bringing this year. Oh, yeah.
They've been trolling the federal government.
It's on.
It's on.
The year of the halving is going to be one to remember. Thanks for listening to the show.
Now, let's get you set up on Fountain so you can start earning some money simply by listening to podcasts.
Go to fountain.fm to download the app.
Once your app is set up, search for Flirting with Bitcoin and hit follow.
Listen to our show and episodes from your other favorite podcasts to earn your first Satoshis, which are fractions of a Bitcoin.
And make sure to keep an eye out for our promoted episodes.
You can earn up to 100 Satoshis just for listening.
Pretty cool, huh?
You can use those sats you've earned to send us a boost, like a little payment with a message.
And I swear, we try to respond to everyone.
Every episode, we shout out the top boosters.
To support us or other podcasters with more sats, you can top up your Fountain wallet with a bank card or Lightning transfer from apps like Strike or Cash App.
The easiest way to learn is to get started.
Now you're all set up for podcasting 2.0.